Devlin Murphy, author of Full Tilt, Island to India with a Bicycle, and of course a lot of other travel books to the Middle East, the Far East and Africa. Now, can you tell me something a little bit about your upbringing in Lismore in Ireland?
Well, it was a very happy, quiet childhood in little rural town, you might say. Town surrounded by beautiful countryside, where I was free as a child to roam around as much as I liked, walking and swimming and cycling and so on. So that was a good beginning.
Did that make you very self-reliant, do you think?
I think probably, yes. Well, I always liked being solitary too. I never much liked joining in groups to play games. I preferred going off and doing my own thing.
I've heard that you live quite frugally. Do you think that came from your upbringing as well?
Probably, yes, because after all, in the 30s, my first memories, life was very simple as compared to now.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there were the war years when even in Ireland there were certain restrictions, some of which I would love to see coming back now. Restrictions on motor transport, for instance.
Oh.
You know, at the beginning of the war, which we didn't call the war in Ireland, we called it the emergency.
The emergency, did you?
We never called it the war.
Goodness.
But at the beginning, our car had to be put up on blocks.
Right.
And it couldn't be used again until the end, sometime after the end of the war, when petrol was available again for private cars.
And you'd like to see some of that come back,
would
you?
I'd love to see that coming back, yes. People getting bicycles again, yes.
Your father was a librarian, wasn't he? Do you think that introduced you to writing and books at a very early age then?
Well, obviously it did, of course, yes. Because I often went to the county library headquarters, especially when the new books were coming in.
Yeah.
And I loved watching them being unpacked, coming out of the crates with the lovely smell of the new books and the excitement of looking to see if any of my favourite authors had new books out.
And who were your favourite authors then?
Then, the usual Arthur Ransom and Hugh Lofting, the William books, all the usual.
Coming back to your journey, now, you had a moment, didn't you, when you thought of doing that journey. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yes, that was a week after I got my first bicycle. I was cycling up a steep hill near Lismore. I can remember looking down at my legs and thinking, because it was quite a steep hill for a 10-year-old,
right,
thinking that if I kept doing that for long enough, I could get to India. And I'd had some years before developed a wish to go to India.
Right.
So that was the start of it.
What was it about India that attracted you?
I don't know. I suppose it was partly probably it was hearing grown-ups talking about it and their experiences there. Then I had a pen friend in those days. We had pen friends instead of communicating now as they do on their phones, whatever you call them.
Yeah, online, yeah.
Yes. And so we wrote to each other regularly, and she was an Indian girl, a Sikh girl, about 4 years older than I was.
Oh.
And we communicated regularly, and she advised me what books to read about India.
Did you have any thought that you'd go out there and actually meet her?
No, of course, yes.
Yeah.
But it, of course, didn't work out like that.
Oh, what a shame. You say that you were a cunning child. I mean, do you think you were actually a secretive child as well? Was that part of your cunning, do you think?
I don't think particularly in general, no.
No.
But obviously I didn't talk about my long-distance plans for the future.
Oh, you didn't mention that to your parents, no?
No, I thought that would, I mean, that didn't seem to be any point in talking about something you couldn't at the moment do.
What would they have said, do you think? Would they have been supportive?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure.
Tell me about when you first got Roz, your trusty bike that took you to India.
Well, that was just a year before I started. Yes, it was in January 62. An Armstrong cadet, man's bicycle, because I always rode men's bicycles.
Okay.
Just the balance is so much better.
It took you 22 years, didn't it, before you actually began on this epic journey? I mean, was it something that you kept in your mind all the time over that period?
Oh, of course. I mean, it was always there. I mean, not, obviously not in the forefront of my mind, but it was always in my mind as something to do.
And you travelled around Europe quite a bit, didn't you, before you made your trip to India?
Usually, yes, every year or so, yes, for a month on the cycling around on the continent, yes.
So they were kind of practice runs,
exactly.
Were they?
Well, I mean, cycling was always my favourite means of getting around.
Do you still cycle?
Not now, because I've got emphysema.
Oh, right.
But I did until I couldn't breathe enough to cycle.
Oh, right.
I never owned or wanted to own a motor car.
Really? Never?
No.
No, okay.
Hate them.
Do you? Mm-hmm. You hate them that much?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me how you actually got to the point of making this trip that became Full Tilt? What led up to it?
Well, I mean, my mother died in August 62, and I'd been looking after her then because she was a complete invalid. I'd been looking after her for 16 years, and then when she died, I decided, you know, the time had come to take off for India. So the following January, I left.
But you must have made quite a lot of preparations, presumably.
Well, no, I mean, that's the thing about cycling. You don't have to make a lot of preparations.
Really? So you just set off?
Get on your bike and buy appropriate clothing, which, of course, in those days was just the ordinary clothing you wore every day.
Right.
It wasn't like nowadays when commercialisation has taken over the clothing.
Yes.
Bicycle clothing as well as all the other clothing industry. And people, they'd have to equip themselves with special, expensive garments and gadgets before they start.
I've walked around some of those bicycle stores, yes, buying things for my children, and they are packed full of all sorts
Absolutely.
Of gadgets and gizmos, presumably a lot of which you don't really need.
Of course you don't. I mean, all you need is a pump and a set of tools. It's not that I was ever able to use the tools.
Right.
But I always had them with me so that I could get other people to use them.
And a map, presumably, though.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Several maps between Ireland and India.
I'm sure. You're quite discreet about certain moments during the journey for Full Tilt. I mean, were there any times when you thought that you really might not make it back? I mean, was it ever that dangerous?
No, of course not. No.
But it seems quite hair-raising at some of the moments you describe. You think, goodness, that sounds quite alarming.
Yes, but not life-threatening.
Right.
You know, uncomfortable or painful or trying. But, as I say, not life-threatening.
But, I mean, there were some alarming moments when suddenly you realised there was somebody in the room with you, a very large man.
Yes, but, I mean, that's... I know nowadays such a fuss is made about that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, it's not that difficult to deal with very large men.
OK.
They all have the same vulnerable area.
And you had a gun with you, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I sold that in Afghanistan, but I realised I didn't really need it. That was because several friends before I left persuaded me it would be a good idea for my self-protection.
Right.
But then in Afghanistan I became an arms dealer and sold it at a profit.
But that's only one gun, so that maybe doesn't classify as an arms dealer.
Maybe not.
No. And when you finally arrived in Delhi, what did you do?
Well, that's... My second book describes that because I met somebody in Delhi, a very wonderful English woman, and she was helping to look after Tibetan refugees in Dharamsala and in the north of India. And she knew the children's camp there. They were desperately in need of help. And even though I had no medical training of any kind, she thought it might be an idea if I could help there for a few months. So that's what I did. And then I wrote my second book about that.
And what was that called?
Tibetan Foothold.
You travelled together with your daughter, Rachel, didn't you? How did that come about?
Well, that was some years later. She had her fifth birthday in India, in Coorg. For the first 5 years, I felt that I would keep her in Europe, you know, in a sort of normal, stable childhood life. Yes. And then she could start travelling with me. So off we went to Coorg, and just a few weeks before her fifth birthday, going from place to place by short journeys in local buses, or we stayed a couple of months in the jungle in Coorg, in an empty house. And then her second journey was exactly a year later. She had her sixth birthday when we were on the way to Baltistan. That was a real... She rode a retired polo pony, and I walked.
Right.
So we spent 3 months there.
What an amazing childhood that you gave her.
For me, it was sort of normal.
I presume for her it became a norm as well.
Yes.
Yeah. And it must have made you very close.
Oh, yes. Mm.
Coming back to Full Tilt, what would you say to people who would like to follow in your footsteps or follow in your cycle steps and actually do what you did and cycle off across the world? What
would
you say to people?
Well, lots of people do. I mean, good luck. Terrific. But, I mean, not... Literally following in my wheel tracks would not be advisable in certain areas now, obviously.
Yeah.
Nor, indeed, would it be enjoyable.
But presumably when you set off, you didn't know yourself either, did you? So it was a sort of a journey into the unknown, wasn't it?
In a sense, it was. But on the other hand, I mean, there was more.